Second case of the day, Lewis versus School District number 70, number 10-1453.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. The first hurdle we have to get across is the whether or not there was a valid settlement agreement in this instance. On April the 24th of 2009, we did go to court and we met with the magistrate and worked out a settlement.
Isn't Illinois law clear? It's a settlement agreement that should be enforced?
No, sir. There's exceptions to any contract.
So somebody's suicide is an exception?
Well, it's not his suicide, but rather the information that we gained from his suicide. And that would be the police investigation into allegations of child molestation and then the subsequent news reports and so forth of the...
Well, let's talk about news reports. On page 13, you say the reviewing court may be familiar with the phenomenon in regards to Chicagoans Phil Paganano, Christopher Kelly, and Michael Scott. Well, let's take Christopher Kelly. Hadn't he been pled guilty, been convicted, and was awaiting sentencing? How is that similar to somebody who's not charged, merely investigated, and commit suicide? The only thing they've got in common is suicide, don't they?
Well, from our perspective, from inside their head, perhaps not.
Then you say on page 14, public policy would be better served if his act of suicide was presumed an admission of guilt to the allegations of child abuse. What authority would this court have to make that public policy?
If you consider the public policy in Illinois of not rewarding or condoning suicide, then basically the lower court treated his suicide as a non-event. And
well, it is. I mean, what you would like us to enter public policy that would say someone who's being investigated as a matter of law should be considered the same as Christopher Kelly, who's awaiting sentencing.
Well, you're right. That's not correct.
Yeah, I think there's a constitutional problem there, isn't there?
Yes.
Okay. So you shouldn't put something in your brief that has absolutely no support under the law that you now concede has no support under the law.
And then this hasn't. I still can't get with how it relates his being under investigation to an FMLA case. I mean, what would you have done differently in the case?
Well,
the defendants had admitted here there was an FMLA violation.
Yes,
the
ma'am.
Settlement was, I think, pretty substantial, $300,000.
$200,000.
I misspoke. So I don't understand what you would have done if you had had that information, how that would have helped you in any way in negotiating.
Well, if we had known that from the beginning, what we believe, then my client would have had different defenses and would have been able to make different claims.
What would those different defenses have
been?
Well, just
basically, you know, they said from the day after they demoted her that her performance was poor. And so she's trying to say, no, my performance is not poor, but the lower court would not consider the meeting minutes and so forth of their official record. The school board keeps an official record. And in that official record, her boss repeats five times that her performance is not poor. And then when we get to court, the day after she complains that she was fired illegally, suddenly her performance is poor.
Well, don't they have the right to amend their complaint and admit a liability at any time? Isn't that the law?
Yes, basically, yes.
And they did.
Yes, they did.
And then you proceed to a settlement conference on the issue of damages. So I'm like Judge Williams. I don't understand where, after a settlement conference, this suicide should set aside the settlement conference and has something to do with liability when it's only a damage case at that point.
Well, at that point, but the falsehood that he told was back in 2006. when they got a protective order to keep us from investigating his relationship to the news.
Because Judge Steele thought it was totally irrelevant, thought it was a red herring.
Well, magistrate judge.
Proud?
Yes. And whether he...
That's even better because you accuse Steele of being prejudiced throughout the proceedings, but there's no accusation against Magistrate Judge Proud.
Well, Judge Proud didn't have that much to do with it.
Well, he had a protective order that you think is significant.
Yes. The protective order was gained by telling Judge Proud that... that Hawkins was a devoted public servant and so forth, and so they got this protective order. And then when he, at the end of the case, he comes and settles the case, and then a week later commits suicide, and we find out that all this police investigation and frankly, that there's an attorney down there that I used to work with, and he's, I talked with him, and he's the fellow that's bringing the cases for the victims. And so I talked to him, and his opinion was that the victims were telling the truth. And so that was my position that I see my time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if this was something where your client was like a whistleblower type and had been informed about molestation and somehow had blown the whistle on this guy, or it had leaked,
she
or something,
was trying.
Then maybe it might have had some relevance, but that didn't come in the record. That didn't come in at all.
Well, that's what she was trying to do back in 2006 when they got that protective order.
Is that one of the counts? That she was a whistleblower?
No. Yeah.
But that's what she was trying to establish was his true motivation in firing her. His true motivation, she was not a poor performer. The record is clear.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is the school district settled. They admitted liability on the FMLA. So that's a victory. You had won.
Yes, I had won on that.
Yeah.
But
you're in your rebuttal time. I'll let you finish your answer. I don't know if you want to save some time.
I'll save some time. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mati.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Christine McTighe. I'm here on behalf of...
I'm sorry.
Oh, Your Honor, it happens all the time. I'm here on behalf of all the defendants. I don't have many points to raise other than what I've raised in my brief, and obviously would like to answer any questions the Court may have.
Well, I've got one, and that is, are you asking us to enforce the settlement agreement or to affirm Judge Steele's dismissal?
The latter, Your Honor.
And... do you see any problem with him not taking steps of sanctions that were increasingly more severe versus dismissal?
You know, this process, after the settlement was reached, there was 9 months of Judge Steele allowing the plaintiff to file pretty much whatever she asked to file. I don't know what else Judge Steele could have done in this situation. What more he could have, he entered orders, he extended deadlines. He entered an order at one point saying, before the dismissal, saying, you know, this is an order of my court, and if you do not follow it, I will dismiss your case. He didn't dismiss the case until the following January. I can't think what more Judge Steele could have done as far as leading up to the ultimate dismissal. I, in my opinion, thought he was being quite generous in letting the plaintiff file what she chose to file. And I guess after 9 months, if the plaintiff says, I'm not going to sign a release or enforce a settlement, what else is the district court to do? I mean, does the case continue in perpetuity? So I think Judge Steele was within his discretion to take the steps he did and enter the orders he did.
Can you give us any logical reason why this suicide has anything to do with a settlement agreement?
I cannot, Your Honor. This is an FMLA case, and as the Court has recognized, we admitted liability. It has nothing to do with any accusations against Dr. Hawkins. It is completely and totally separate. I don't see any relevance at all. And I have, quite frankly, when I first received this case from the trial attorney, that was the first issue we talked about, was the relevance. I said, you know, am I missing something? counsel, or in the plaintiff's brief, there's been mention made of these cases involving suicide and whether suicide is some sort of admission of guilt. I didn't get into this in my brief, but I would just like to point out to the court that of all those cases I've reviewed, they're all criminal cases in which, as Judge McCuskey, as you recognize, the defendant was either charged or on trial. And the evidence of suicide would go into the record as some sort of indication of guilt. There's only one civil case I'm aware of that involves suicide, and it was suicide of a witness, in which it's out of the Fourth Circuit. It's called Tug Raven. That's the only civil one I found. So this is not, as the court recognizes, this is not a criminal case. This has nothing to do with any charges against Dr. Hawkins. I simply don't see how either the suicide or any cases involving suicide are relevant. There was a protective order entered by the magistrate. The plaintiff never appealed from that protective order when this case was up before. This is the second appeal in this case. It's our contention that that's law of the case. The plaintiff could have challenged that order in the first appeal here. The plaintiff chose not to. Therefore, any inquiry into these allegations against Dr. Hawkins or Rob's boys, simply not in the case any longer. I have nothing further unless the court has further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. McTighe. How much time does Mr. Lewis have? 3 minutes.
Would you address that issue of the protective order, that you didn't appeal it the first time and now it's the law of the case, so we shouldn't be talking about these matters?
Well, any order that the court enters could be changed if the court finds that it was brought about by a fraud. So, yes, the court can revisit that. The problem I'm having is that way at the beginning of the case, when we were making allegations that she was fired so Hawkins could hire his friend with whom he had a special relationship. Now, they came and said, oh, no, that's he's a devoted public servant. And then at the very end of the case, then we find out he is not. Or at least there's a lot of evidence to show that he is not.
We find out at the end of the case there are allegations of an investigation,
yes,
which your client believed he should have been investigated from the beginning and the protective order was entered and not appealed to this court.
Well, we kind of believed him. I thought he and the replacement were lovers. I had no idea that he was a child molester. I thought that the special relationship would tend towards her claim for emotional distress. See, she had these claims at the beginning of the case that fell by the wayside, that would not have fallen by the wayside if he'd have been truthful back then. And that's why when we get to the end of the case and find out that we'd been tricked basically the whole time, that why we did what we did. And I would hope that, you know, this court doesn't think that we did that in bad faith, that it was no bad faith involved. I hope we don't get stuck with that sanction. And I understand that he hasn't actually, you know, ordered the sanction yet, but has asked them to submit their bill. And, you know, because of our bad conduct, I don't think we had bad conduct. If you get past this valid settlement agreement, then as far as the FMLA stuff goes, they said that she's not entitled to any recovery because, well, she could come back when she was done with leave. Well, the basic premise of that is that she was on leave when she tried to come back, and that is not true. She was not on leave. Her leave had expired, and she asked to come back, and they wouldn't let her come back. And so I don't believe that 214B really is applicable. And I've made a big deal about notice about it and stuff because, frankly, she couldn't know that applied to her because it says if you're coming back from leave. And that's not the case. So there's a few other things. But hopefully, if you decide that was a valid settlement agreement, I would ask you to enforce it as opposed to dismiss it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. We'll take the case under advisement. Call the final.